5-1, baby. 1-5. Arsenal didn't get out of Anfield alive. Have the doors open to Liverpool in Champions League football. Gonna make it if we try. It's the Day Trippers. On tonight's show, we're joined by a man known by nearly all LFC fans for his forthright views, the sports editor of The Times, Tony Evans. And don't worry, we'll definitely ask him if he still writes Lambert ahead of Rodgers and Martinez. We round out our worst 11s with our choices of noxious number 9s. We talk, smile, laugh a bit, and remember the complete and utter annihilation of Arsenal on Saturday morning, bizarrely predicted by our own Nicky Fillage, who's normally more of a jinx than a bag of cats wedged under a ladder with a magpie perched on top of it. We look forward to another midweek away fixture to the London home of Michael Jackson, and we finish, as ever we do, with your listeners' question. Right, first up, we return to filling out our worst Liverpool 11s. It's a simple one to finish, unless you're one of the truly awful strikers who've worn the red. So who were the most atrocious front men that you've watched playing for Liverpool? We're going to start with Tony Evans on this. Tony, your shout.
Oh, well, I remember Jack Whittam, don't I? So, you know, it's, you know, the guitar-playing genius who scored a hat-trick against Derby and very little else. Right. You know, he did have injuries, to be fair, and he was behind Toshak. But, you know, it's, I just think he's like a name to conjure with. You know, what was great about him is he played the guitar, and every newspaper piece after his hat-trick was all about the guitar.
Right. Yeah. It's a newspaper man's delight, that. Okay, Moldy, your shout.
I'm going to go with David Ngog.
Oh, yeah?
You know, a young French lad coming through. I remember a few people said, oh, he's going to be like Henri and stuff, but he was another one of those shrewd like Zidane. He was just hopeless.
Yeah. So, nice and straightforward, David Ngog. Okay. Paul Brennan.
I'm going to go for Diouf. He got a shout, I think, in the playing on the wing and one of someone else's...
Yeah, that was my team, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm going for him up front, just... an absolute disgrace, really, the way he carried on. He was shite as well. And then the cherry on top is when, it was just last year he did an interview where he said that Steven Gerrard is jealous of him or something like that. So, fuck off, like.
Steve Daly.
Yeah, for me, Diouf, again, yeah. Just a horrible pox of a man, and couldn't ever take to him. He just strikes me as the person that stopped us signing Nicholas Anelka when I think he would have actually been a good player for the club, and I think we spent the money on that. Whatever, I'm actually going to try not curse a lot this week.
I think you really should.
Ultimately, it's him. Long story short, there's lots of contenders, but it's
but
him. Just personality as well as being shit.
Perfect.
Then it's him.
Perfect, Andy.
Carol, for me, as is my best worst anyway. We got all excited because we were spending 35 million. Liverpool had to spend 2 million on Carol. We wouldn't have been near excited, so it's not the fella's fault, but came in absolutely atrocious player. Fucking, like, words escape me how bad Carroll is. So he's in my best worst 11.
Best worst 11, yeah. Andy Carroll for me too, primarily because I wanted him to be so much better than he was and ended up being a bit of a disaster. So, Phil, will you finish us out?
Yeah, going sort of on Andy's tip, but my own personal one was Dean Saunders. I suppose an awful lot of my picks have been from the Souness era, so I'm just rounding off with another one. Jeff could have been well in there because he was a despicable creature in a Liverpool jersey. But just for me, Dean Saunders, we paid a massive amount of money for him at the time. He came with a huge reputation. Ronnie Rosenthal gets worse grief than Dean Saunders does, but Dean Saunders should get it just for his brutal hairdo as well. It was just awful at the time. I genuinely, every time I think back to the Souness era, you could actually pick that 11 and just put it in as the worst Liverpool 11. I can't. Only Hodgson's time at Liverpool could you feel a worst 11, but he's saved by the fact that Torres and Gerrard were still in the team at that stage. Apart from that, just Clough and Dean Saunders are my front two, so that says it all for me.
Diouf kind of looks like the sort of fella that would have spat in his ma as he was being given birth to.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard not to pick Diouf. It goes back to like the Nunes show on the right wing. Yeah. You know, it's hard not to pick Diouf. I was just picking Dean Saunders because we paid massive amount of money for him at the time. He came with to be Rushy's replacement and the whole lot. And he's just pony. He ended up at Villa a couple of seasons later. Yeah. He was just pony.
Yeah. I couldn't even put Diouf for me worst 11 because he's in an 11
and he doesn't deserve to be in any Liverpool 11.
Right. Let's move on to our review and the pure sex that was Saturday's thrashing of Arsenal. Now, as we always do, we're going to start with Brendan Watch. What were our thoughts on the gaffer, his selection, tactics, performance overall? Pretty much a perfect performance, Paul Brennan.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Brilliant setup. He completely kind of outwitted Wenger. I think there was no point in us kind of kicking ourselves in the balls, trying to kind of press up high against Arsenal, like trying to play them at their own game. So. And I thought, especially with the way that it worked against Everton, I thought it was the right choice to kind of sit back, absorb like any pressure, like let their defenders have it. Mm. But kind of as soon as they came about 10 yards into our half, we kind of swarmed all over them. Mm. And we picked the right time to break and all. I just thought it was brilliant from Rodgers.
Excellent. Tony Evans, would you concur with that? Pretty impressive by the manager.
Oh, I thought it was a fantastic tactical performance. I mean, you know, switching Suarez, putting him on Monreal, that was fantastic. But, you know, the thing is, Arsenal do the same thing all the time. They never vary. They push the full-backs up. They leave the centre-halves up on an island. They've got no old midfield player there. And you know what? You know, all he did is get the ball. When they give away possession, which they do too often, about 35 yards out from the opposition's goal, get it forward. Mm. It was a masterpiece. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Pretty impressive stuff. Molly?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant this weekend. I was actually listening to his press conference this morning, and he made a great point about Coutinho, about his defensive work of late. It's been fantastic. I was watching that game, and he tracked back a lot. He was getting in there to tackles, and then as soon as he got the ball, the head was up looking for the first pass. And I think that's something that Rodgers has maybe brought into his game. So listen, if you want to be in this team, you're going to be a bit more defensive at times. And he definitely showed that over the weekend. That was just a fantastic performance overall.
Steve Daly, your thoughts on how the manager performed?
Yeah, absolutely. As has been said already, you know, you couldn't argue with what he did. I was at the game, which was it was great to be over for it and get to see it. And just looking at it, you know, everybody knows you get a different perspective when you're there live, and to actually see the work that was done by the lads off the ball, you know, and what would have been probably out of the camera pan. Was just immense. Nobody stopped for the entire 90 minutes. They wanted more, you know what I mean? And so did the cop. But you know, every single person on that pitch killed themselves for the time they were on there. I don't think there was one person coming off there not having given everything they could.
Yeah, tell me about that. Tell me about getting a good view and overview of it. There's been all these pretty pictures on Twitter over the day. I think you've probably all seen them, with beautiful triangles and little shapes being drawn. And to back up the idea that Brendan's philosophy and Brendan's football is coming forward and being seen. I don't know how much we can read into that, but what did it look like overall?
Yeah, no, it looked absolutely perfect. You know, the things for me, and as people know, I've been in here slating Sissoko when he started out. I thought he was excellent on Saturday. I really did. You know, he didn't put a foot wrong. Listen, people might be able to pick stuff out on replays and stuff like that. I haven't got a chance to watch the match back fully, but being there on the day, his work and his communication with the players around him actually was very impressive. Sterling and Coutinho, Hendo you expected from him at this stage, and it's probably unfair that I'm not singling him out for praise, but you expect that high energy game from him, that pressing game. But Coutinho and Sterling were excellent at it on Saturday as well. And they were interchanging. They were taking turns. One was dropping maybe 5-10 yards back, and the Coutinho was maybe pressing their centre halves, or maybe as Arteta came into our half with the ball, and then they were switching it over. And it was just great to see. It was great to see the amount of energy they put in.
Steve, just in on that, I remember last week when I was here and I said that we'd win 5-0, right? And the premise that I said we'd win 5-0 was that Joe Allen would be back in the team and be able to press high, you know, bring that pressing game back to it, right? When I saw that Coutinho was starting in the side at the weekend, I couldn't see us winning that game.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, like I thought Arsenal were modelled to win that game when I thought we were looking at it. I had a repeat of the Aston Villa setup where Coutinho was wide left and we were playing with two in the centre, or that we'd go back to sort of the West Brom game where Coutinho Coutinho was actually pushed on into a 10 position, and Hendo was sort of floating between him and Gerrard and not actually doing much in the actual game, because let's be honest about it, he didn't, like,
he has the ability to drift out of the game.
He has, which was seen against West Brom. So for me, I couldn't see how we were going to win that game when I saw the 11. And credit to Rodgers, he got him to he flattened those two in the midfield, and suddenly they played the same way as Everton in terms of their hurrying and their pressing. And it was really good. And in fairness to Rodgers, like, something that Andy said a couple of weeks ago, he learns as he appears now to be learning as he goes along in terms of as managing
that's
his
what
team
you
himself.
Want. You know,
and that's exactly
that's
what you
we
want.
Can ask
you can't argue for that at all.
Can I just jump in and congratulate Phil on that 5-0? I just want to say there as well, like, there's nothing better as a Liverpool fan than being proven right than being proven wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I seen Sissoko playing for Liverpool first, I slaughtered him. I wanted an attacking player, you know, someone who could keep the ball better than Enrique. I thought it was something that we really needed. And when I seen Sissoko wasn't very competent on the ball, I was very disappointed. But in fairness to the fella, since Flanagan got injured on the left, he's come in, and I don't think he's put a foot wrong, and he's getting an awful lot of stick off the fans, and I think it's totally unwarranted. I think he's being brilliant, and as I said a few weeks ago, he's the most is what he is player that I've seen playing for Liverpool. He's just there and he's doing a job, and fair fucking play to him.
But how many times have we given out about fullbacks who can't defend?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, there wasn't a single fan in Anfield on Saturday giving out about him.
It's gas, because, like, look at the chances the fans are giving Flanagan. Okay, not the best going forward. He gets himself forward, but he's not the best on the ball. Not like Johnson is when he plays well. But the fans are giving Flanagan a real good chance because he's a local lad. But Sissoko and Flanagan are doing exactly what Johnson can't fucking do when he's in the team.
Absolutely.
And that's defend and closing down cross and preventing teams from hurting us.
Yeah.
Andy, you've pretty much driven us down a street we were going to go down anyway. That's talking about Ali Sissoko. He was going to come up later in the agenda anyway. Molly, how did you feel Sissoko performed on the day, and do you see him as a viable option going forward if we're going to keep where we are in the league?
I thought he was solid over the weekend. I know what the lads said, he was brilliant. I wouldn't go that far with him. You know, going forward, I can't see him staying next season. I reckon he's going to be sent back myself. You know, I still think we need a better left back than Enrique, and Sissoko is not better than Enrique in my book. But yeah, overall, the performance in the weekend, and even against West Brom, he was solid enough.
Yeah, Tony, your honest take, and I know it was pretty impressive to see him being big brother to Sterling at one stage there, acting the enforcer and then falling over, as he tends to do as well a couple of times. I got a great laugh out of him. What was your opinion of him on the day?
Oh, Sissoko. Yeah. Oh, Sissoko. Well, I mean, let's face it, he's not the long-term solution, is he? I mean, you know, he's in a long tradition of, like, comedy Liverpool left-backs who hasn't got it. But, you know, I mean, you know, it's, you know, Bernie Rubble, he had something, you know, and I just can't see him making it long-term. The defence, without a doubt, needs more help. You know, it's, you know, Flanagan is doing great, but, you know, it's, the manager's iffy about the centre half, and I would have thought the one thing he'll be looking to do in the summer is to strengthen there. But you know what? I think what we've seen, the best thing about it, and the best thing about the whole development of Brendan Rodgers in the last year, 14, 15 months, is he's become pragmatic. Mm-hmm. And keep the ball away from the defenders, give it to the people who can play, get it up there fast. Yeah. So, you know, it's, I do think it's we haven't seen the solution to the left side, and we haven't really seen I don't think the manager's happy with the centre of defence. But hell, if we can blow Arsenal away, who cares? You know, and if he can keep setting up the way he's set up for the rest of the season, who needs to defend?
Yeah, fair play. Paul Brennan, we've a really special talent on our hands with Raheem Sterling, it looks like.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of him. Obviously, you know, it's obvious that he's able to dribble with the ball, and his pace is obvious. It's there for everyone to see. But there were, like, his intelligence recently, like, you can give him the ball in his own half, and you're not afraid that he's going to do something stupid. He keeps it really well. He protects it. His movement, like, with the ball and without it, has been absolutely brilliant. And Rodgers has said that, like, he's, like, what's Sterling? He's 18 or 19, and Rodgers has said that he's one of the most tactically clued up players that he's worked with. So, which, I just think, again, like, massive problems he caused Arsenal with the ball and without it. Again, like, it's, he's just one of our most consistent performers at the moment. Like,
do you have the same fear that I have that he's Hodges going to take him and destroy him over summer?
Ah, well, yeah, he has to kind of go there and fucking enjoy Roy Hodgson for a few months in the World Cup, obviously. But yeah, I'm sure we'll be able to get that back out of him during pre-season. We'll un-hodge him.
I hope he comes back in one piece. Steve Daly, would you talk to me about Jordan Henderson? Because my God, that kid is a hell of a player when he wants to be. Right back on song. I've written down here, if only he could shoot, he'd be in line for player of the year. I mean, that the through ball from Coutinho, and he's through on goal, and that lamentable shot. His shooting is fucking atrocious.
Well, I don't know whether it was a shot or what it was.
I don't know what it was, yeah.
It was something. It was a kick of his boot, anyway. Yeah. That's he's been exceptional. You know, he really did struggle, and I have to say, you know, a few of us, and probably the lads that are here, are people that I know who were supporting him when he wasn't having the best of times, and I definitely didn't want to see him go when there was talk of him going to Fulham last season as part of the Clint Dempsey deal, wasn't it? That's what he was a make weight in, or partially, but he's come on leaps and bounds. And you know what, I actually, yet again, I watched it on Saturday. As soon as Steven Gerrard went off the pitch, he started barking orders. He started talking to people. He started dictating, because he steps his game. When Steven Gerrard goes off that pitch, he steps up another 10%, 15% from what was already an excellent performance. But it's like he loves the responsibility, and he feels that when Gerrard's not there, he has the right to take it and the right to dictate what's going on around him. And it's great to see, because I think he can be a really, really good player, you know, and I'm delighted we have him.
Phil Casey, I'm going to come to you about your namesake. Quite the playmaker when he wants to be, and had a hell of a day against Arsenal, and that's Coutinho. What was your response to him?
For me, anyway, he's benefiting from the tactical slight change of flattening that two in the midfield. So that you see a range. He can use his vision, but he's also a little Jack Russell. He's just a terrier. He just gets around the pitch. You know, he's willing to do the hard, you know, physical work in as much as he wants to get on the ball and be, you know, creative and beautiful in terms of the way he passes. He sees things so quickly. So if he's winning balls in around the middle third or even in his own third, he can quickly distribute the ball into, say, the feet of Suarez or Sturridge that's landing on the halfway line and has sucked the defenders on. We all thought that he'd be a number 10, a great number 10, and probably a long-term number 10 for Liverpool. But the way he's playing at the moment, if you're looking at a sort of 4-3-3 setup, he's ideal to work off, you know, as in that sort of, you know, Iniesta style midfielder, because Iniesta can play either in the three behind the striker, he can play in that two in the midfield. It's a worthwhile shout, but I think there's an element of fortune a bit in the way that Rafa came across the 4-2-3-1 and the way we set up. There is a slight element of fortune that the injuries we've had has contributed to him finding this way of playing and fitting Coutinho into the team this way. And fair, Andy called that as well yesterday and today on this. And you know, fortune sometimes favours the brave, and the way we set up definitely favours the brave if we continue to play that way. And Coutinho is the right man for us.
Molly, would you concur with Phil there that Coutinho is very much the man at the moment and very much suiting this current setup?
Oh yeah, 100%. I've been really impressed in the last couple of weeks. You know, as I said, those true balls he put through, they're not even surprised anymore. We nearly specked him off of him. But what has really impressed me has been his defence work. As Philo said there, he's like the Jack Russell all over the park, harassing midfielders, trying to get the ball back, setting up attacks. You know, he's been really brilliant of late.
Okay, Andy, I know you wanted to chat about Steven Gerrard. I know in the past you've spoken in defence of him when he's maybe been getting a bit of abuse that you thought maybe wasn't warranted. How do you feel he's adapting at the minute?
Well, first of all, people are entitled to criticise Gerrard all they want. It's just what got my back up was the level of criticism that Gerrard came. And people start suggesting that Gerrard's never played well in centre of the park and he's never dictated a game, he's never been in control of midfield. And they just forget about the past and just want, you know, having a go at him, which was totally unjust. He's settling lovely into that defensive midfield role. Okay, coming up to the Villa game, when Rodgers put it out there in the press conference and pretty much every Liverpool fan was talking about it all week, and I remember a conversation I had with one of the lads and we sat there and it just, just made so much sense to us. Like, you know, you were saying he's all the attributes, he's the experience, he reads the game, he passes, he can tackle. It all made sense. And then with the Villa game, when he got, let's face it, he got the bollocks frightened out of him by Villa, the way they started. Similar to the way we started against Arsenal. Liverpool shit themselves. Jarrett couldn't get a hold of the game. He didn't know what was going on. And
Andy, is there any reason to believe that that might not happen again?
No, that undoubtedly will happen. Jarrett is he's still settling in. As many years he has under his belt, he's still settling into a position that he's never really played before. And he does need to start, you know, communicating with Rodgers and on the training pitch and just learning and watching videos of other players like the likes of Busquets, how he does it. And maybe we can prolong Jarrett's career in that position. Okay, let's not get excited. It is kind of two games where he played really, really well, Everton and Arsenal, and then I thought he was quite good in the West Brom game. But like, he's proven people wrong there.
Yeah.
And that he can play that role, and he was brilliant, especially on Saturday. Like,
Tony Evans, would you agree that this could be somewhere we're going to see Jarrett going forward now, that he is actually maybe going to stamp his authority on this position?
Well, I just worry that he's not mobile enough to play that position consistently. Yeah. You know, the thing is, I think I play him in that position at home against teams that were wide open, like Everton and Arsenal, who are going to come on to you and they're going to leave spaces behind them. I'm not so sure I'd be playing him away. I'd like to see him find a position a bit further up the field as well, where he gets into shooting positions, where he can use his burst, which he can't use that deep. It's one of them where he's playing well, but I look at his legs and you think, can this carry him through? Obviously, it probably will to the end of the season, but next season, will it begin to tell on him? I'd use him more sparingly, and I'd try and use him more creatively. But you know what? I'm saying that you can't argue with the results, and you can't argue with the way he's played. As I say, I just worry that going forward that he's not, he hasn't got the energy that he once had.
Yeah, I think it's the only position he has the energy to do. To be quite honest, if you ever hear Rodgers talking about, Rodgers is mad into the Paul Barcelona setup, and he's done seminars with the Spain team, and he always talks about what he wants his number 6 to do, and his number 10, his number 4. Jarrett doesn't really fit into any of them other roles, like your Xavi or your Iniesta roles. If Jarrett wants to, prolong his career at Liverpool in midfield, it's probably the only position I could see him. And if not, Jarrett goes forward or back again and plays right back to prolong a career. But I don't see him playing further up the pitch, for Liverpool.
Well, the thing is, though, we talk about Barcelona and we talk about, Busquets and all that. I mean, it feels a bit last year to me. I mean, we're playing more like Dortmund. And that's one of the great things we've seen from Brendan Rodgers in the last year is his development. He's not tied to one way of playing. He's, it bothered me when he first arrived that, he wanted to pass people to death. He wanted to do the same things. Now he's being flexible and using people in different roles. And I don't think you can play the captain up the field consistently. But also, likewise, I don't think you can play him deep every game. I think you've got to pick and choose the games and how to use them, where to use them, and how to get the best out of them, because he's got so much talent. You've got to find a way to keep him on that pitch.
Yeah, I totally agree. You have to have him on the pitch. We had this here. Does a Gerrardless Liverpool, does it weaken the team? And absolutely, it does.
Tony, do you not think that? By having Coutinho and Henderson in there, you offset the fact that his legs aren't what they used to be. So he doesn't actually need as much mobility, because he's got a lot more. He's got two lads there that are covering a lot of running and getting in front of players. So he doesn't seem to get as overrun as he would. Say with Lucas, who also has mobility issues as well alongside him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously if you put people who've got high energy, it will help. But, games like Arsenal and Villa, they pass the ball, Arsenal up at the Emirates, they pass the ball round him and he got caught on his heels. He's also not the greatest user of space ever, because he was a better user of the ball, always. And it's difficult to learn it at this stage in your career. And, you know, when your legs mightn't quite have it as much in them as they once had. I'm sceptical that it's even a medium-term solution. But while he's playing like this, like I said, you can't argue.
Yeah, I agree with what you're getting at, Tony, that you can't really argue with his performances against Everton and Arsenal, but at the same time, they're kind of specialised games where, you know, we're sitting back and there's not going to be much space around Gerrard, like, to play around him. Like you can't argue with what he did. Like, Arsenal, they used Giroud a lot, like, you know, to build up play. And every time it went into his feet and he got held up by the centre-backs, Gerrard kind of snapped into a tackle on him. And, like, it's, you know, it's like games, like you said, away from home against poorer teams or whatever, where we have to kind of play out a bit and, you know, kind of open up and be expansive. Like, there's just going to be a lot more space around Gerrard, and that's where my worry would come from with him playing in front of the defence.
Yeah, I mean, if you got a team who are getting the midfield runners going from deep, yeah, and, you know, and coming past him, you know, a big tall man, you know, sort of as a pivot on the ball, knocking it down, and the runners come through, it's up for him to pick them up, quite, you know, sort of quite as easily. But I mean, if you've got people like that, you've got the personnel to play a different sort of midfield, and maybe that's somewhere where you're going to be playing teams that are a bit more physical. You might play him instead of Coutinho. You know, it's you know, the thing is, he has options in that midfield, and it's the first time in a few years that we've had options. And so, you know, we're talking about where best to play the captain. I tell you what, that's a great advance from you know, sort of since about what, 2009, 2010, when you know, we just put him in and hope for the best with everyone else around him.
Yeah. Fair play, Molly. Can I bring you in here? What the hell happened to Arsenal, and how much of their ineffectiveness is attributable to how we played on the day? I mean, was it a kind of a perfect storm of them being really, really off the pace and us being excellent, or what was your take on it?
I thought it's like you said, it was one of those perfect storms, I think. You know, the early goal obviously really helped us. Then we scored, what was it, 3 or 4 minutes after that, and I think Arsenal was just shell-shocked after that. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know, should they attack us, because they knew they attacked us. We were coming back on them again. They were kind of passing the ball around midfield. They were just lacking of ideas. You know, it was one of those games where everything just clicked into place for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Daly, you were there. You saw the game live. What was your take on how Arsenal did? Was there a visible dropping of the shoulders?
None of the lads actually believe I was at the game.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
No, seriously, yeah.
Seven pictures from the internet.
Yeah. Listen, it was, you know, obviously, as Moley alluded to there, the early goal was massive for us. And let's not take that away from anything. That would have been a completely different game if we'd given Arsenal 10 minutes to get into their stride. And everything we're talking about, our shape, everything could have been under question. We could have been in deep shit. But the truth is, after the first goal, I was absolutely disgusted. If that had been Liverpool and they had reacted, even their body language after the goal went in.
Yeah, that's what we're getting at, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, not, whatever, 57 seconds in or whatever, we score the goal. Surely the thing is, everybody, let's get back into this. Come on, still the game is there to be played, right? 10 minutes in, we get the second goal, and it was like a zombie apocalypse. Honestly, they were walking around like Dawn of the Dead, going, what the fuck just happened there? Where did that baldy bastard come from? You know, honestly, it was incredible. And as the goals went, they showed no hunger, no desire to get back into that game, nothing. They showed absolutely nothing. If somebody had told me, you know, if you walked in there off the street and got a ticket for a game from, say you were from a different country and just wanted to go see sports, and somebody told
like
you...
Ireland.
Like Ireland, yeah. But, you know what I mean? If you didn't know the sport and know who was playing and you watched that game and somebody told you the lads in yellow there are the league leaders, you just wouldn't believe it. And they were that way for the whole game. They did not want to know about it. They wanted out of there. They wanted to get on the fucking M1 back down to London and be gone. You know?
Yeah, Arsenal are a team who thrive on confidence, and you see it in games when once things start to come off, it gets better and better and better, and then they destroy teams that way. Looking at them against Palace the game before, like, you know, they were struggling a lot. And once Arsenal got the goal score early against them, I kind of went to myself, oh, this could be too early, you know, like against Chelsea. With Chelsea, it got their backs up,
yeah,
and they came out like fucking lunatics against us. With Arsenal, they shit themselves, and they their confidence was gone, their confidence was shot, and Liverpool just capitalised on it so quickly. It was brilliant.
I echo that as well. Like what got to me was it reminded me so much of our Champions League run into Istanbul in 05. The way we came out of the traps, it was such a Rafa style opening to a game. We just went, they weren't expecting us to come at them that hard and that quickly, despite the Everton game, right? They weren't expecting us to come out and hit them that hard. And you're thinking back to the Juventus game in Anfield.
I was just going to say, the Hippie goal. Yeah, yeah,
like it's so reminiscent of that type of game, and teams really weren't expecting it. It was just fantastic. Like and you're sitting there, and I was in disbelief. Like you're looking at it at 20 minutes, and I remember saying to the lads there, going, this is the longest fucking game ever. And this was like 50, 60 minutes into the second half. Going, is this not over yet? Like, you're never 4-0 up with a half an hour left to go. It's so rare, especially against Arsenal or something. It's just like, this is going on forever.
Did you hear what Mikey Owen said before the game?
No.
He says, Liverpool are going to come out of the traps here. They're going to come out flying. And I'm thinking to myself, shut your fucking mouth, as usual. That's not going to happen. That's completely not going to happen. And then if Arsenal, you know, if Liverpool in the first 10 minutes, if Arsenal are still in the game after 10 minutes, and I was going, what the fuck are you talking about? 10 minutes? He was fucking spot on.
I tell you, one other thing.
So you're saying Michael Owen knows football?
he got it right on Saturday. One other thing. Looking at our lads, you know, when Arsenal signed Ozil, I thought to myself, Jesus, they've got themselves a player that could win them the league. He reminds me of a fucking German Berbatov. Honestly, he is a lazy, moany bastard. Honestly, God. And as soon as things aren't going his way, he doesn't. You know what? He's one of those players that, you know, those lads that if they get a kick up in the park on a Sunday, they get a kick 5 minutes in, you may as well fucking sub them because they don't want to know about the game for the rest of it. That's what he was like on Saturday. He didn't want to know about it. And he absolutely, for 42 million quid, he would not fit in our system.
They're playing Stoke away in a few weeks, aren't they? Imagine under Britannia, fucking blizzard blowing in his face. He'd be fucking out of there.
That fuckers don't have to play with a balaclava on, never mind gloves.
Paul Brennan, can I get some thoughts from you on Martin Skrtel? He seems to be a real season on, season off type player. You know, he's flying at the moment. He had been awful before that. He was brilliant. He won this Golden Samba and all that. You know, I mean, what the hell is going on? Should we get rid of him next year and then get him back the year after? Is that what we should think?
Send him out on loan.
Yeah. Well, the only really consistent season he had was Kenny's full season. Like, other than that, he's like, if someone said to you that he'd be playing as well as he is now, like a few months ago when he was scoring like own goals every game, really, I'd just like, he just looked at all at sea. Like, see, like, he's just one of those players where, I know he's playing really well at the moment, but I think he's been here long enough that I'd say that we'll never be able to fully rely on him for a season. Like,
yeah, I think on Skrtel as well. Like, it is serious. Like, it's a season on, season off. Ever since he joined, it's always been like he seems to have one good season, one bad season, one good season, one bad season. Now, I do think that it does help him playing as a right-sided centre-back. I thought an awful lot of his poor form last season coincided when he moved across to left centre-back when Agger was out injured. Similar happened when Kenny was there for the run after Christmas. Agger missed most of the time after Christmas, and Skrtel moved across to left centre-back and didn't look as solid as it was. I don't think he's ultimately the answer to, if you want to push on and win titles and the whole lot, well, then again, if we win it this year, like, you know, I'm not saying it, well,
which we will.
Which we will, yeah. if you know, he's the type of centre-back that you'd imagine would be in a title-winning side, but he's done a good job. He's played a hell of a lot better since Christmas than he had before Christmas. And, you know, if you can get players into form as you come into a run-in, you can't ask for more than that. And in fairness to him, he's proven a real threat in the air from corners. He stopped hugging blokes, and he looks a better player for it.
He reminds me of a Ferguson player. And what I mean by that is, if you remember when United were winning leagues rather than being, you know, dwindling in mid-table, they used to have players that came in patches.
Yeah.
But Nani wouldn't be seen for 3 months, and the fucker would come in and score 7 goals in 3 games and then disappear on holidays for 2 months ago. And you were thinking, you know, he did it with Berbatov. Berbatov was in an amazing streak of form, and he took him out of the side, and I forget who he put in instead. I don't know whether it was Rooney coming back or someone at the time, and they hit a purple patch as well. And you know what, if we can get that, fuck it, let's enjoy it while we can, because if we're getting Skirtle in his purple patch now, great. You know, I'd like to see him stay next season as backup. Tony mentioned earlier on about Brendan Rodgers maybe needing to strengthen centre half. I don't know whether that's our main area. I know where he's probably coming from in terms of the injuries and stuff like that we've had this season, but I think if we've got Agger, Skirtle and Sacco, and then Toure still there as a backup, and possibly Andre Wisdom coming in as a young lad who's done, from what reports say, quite well so far, I think we've much more pressing areas to be worried about than centre half, personally.
In fairness, they've been helped by the fact that Johnson's not in the fucking team, alone. Cross is coming in.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. Yeah,
actually, nothing more needs saying than that. That's pretty much spot on. Molly, talk to me about some highlights of the match for you. Outside of the goals, which were obviously some of the more clearly wonderful, Skirtle himself with that second header was just bloody spectacular. But tell me about some of your highlights of the match outside of the goals. I'll come to Tony then next.
It was just the overall teamwork. Everyone absolutely worked their socks off for one another. You know, I looked there in the midfield at one stage, and Gerard was so composed there. He actually played, I think it was kind of a centre-back role more than a defensive midfield, I thought, against Arsenal. And yeah. He had Henderson and Coutinho there in front of him, who were working their socks off, tracking back, harassing every Arsenal player that came on the ball. And every time, what really impressed me was, every time they won the ball, it wasn't just Sturridge or Suarez going up front. They were all going for it. Sturridge, Suarez, Sterling, Coutinho, Henderson, they were all bombing forward. I thought it was really impressive. Like other teams, you see, when they go on the break, you might have one or two players going up against three or four defenders. Wasn't that for us? We was four or five of us going up forward for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Tony, anything in particular stand out from you outside the goals that was a particular highlight for you?
Oh, well, a couple of things. I mean, the movement going forward was brilliant. You know, it's they dragged the Arsenal defenders all over the place, never let them settle. I mean, Suarez, you know, the volley and the free kick. I mean, yeah, you know, it's just an outrage, isn't it? You know, it's unbelievable. And it's Coutinho. I'd love to watch him because he takes a look before the ball arrives, and then he wants to get it forward. You know, it's not in square. You know, no safe percentage passes, but you know, get it in. Go on, lads. Go on, get on to the end of that. And you know, you gotta love that, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Andy.
The biggest fucking regret of that match is that Suarez effort not going in. Holy! The biggest regret of the fucking season. If that goes in, I'm pulling my Mickey off and I'm fucking. I'm fucking it at the TV. Curtains down, fucking game over. Good luck.
Just turn the season off.
Yeah.
Luis Suarez, it's job over. Done.
I enjoyed seeing us kicking the shit out of Jack Wilshere. I thought that was brilliant because I was like, remember he left one on Gerrard got him back. Henderson took him now. Coutinho like dominated him. Yeah. Not only did he dominate him, like. Wilshere was roiled like all match, and Coutinho just wound him up to bits. And Sissoko as well, standing up to him when he.
How good was that? Yeah. That was trying to be scary. Ah, bless him.
Seeing a great tweet was if Wilshere wants to see out of Gerrard's pocket, he just has to get up on Ross Barkley's shoulders.
For me,
you know what he does, Wilshere? He's that sort of player. When things are going wrong for him, he'll leave his foot in to make it look as if he's making an effort. Yeah. You know what? He's a whingy little twat.
He's a little shit. I wonder if maybe Rodgers like had, that was part of his plan. If like I don't know whether he told us to kind of have a go and try and needle Wilshere, or whether we were just doing it because Wilshere's a cunt.
I have to say, right, my highlights of the game for me. Had to be Kolo's miss, right? After crossbar, after the shot out the post, because even his face afterwards, he was like going, "Oh no!" And then he thought it was the funniest thing ever. And like, "Ah!"
There was two bits for me in the second half. Kolo went up. I don't know what attacking piece of play it was, but he went up, and they broke. And I swear to fuck, it was the slowest I've ever seen somebody trying to back. I'm fairly sure we attacked and then they broke again by the time we got back to our box. It was insane. And on top of that, there was actually quite a nice moment in the cup. There was a man two rows in front. And after we scored our fourth, everybody was going fucking mental, as you can imagine. We're looking at the scoreboard, no one can believe it. And he just had tears running down his face. And it was his 75th birthday.
No
and he was
way,
there going, quality. This is the best birthday ever. Yeah, this is the best birthday ever. You know what I mean?
It's my birthday on Saturday as well.
Oh, lovely. Thanks, thanks, Andy.
Yeah. Wait, were you crying as well?
Bollocks.
Because he pulled his Mickey off.
threw it at the telly.
You'd be crying too, fair.
I'll just say, Luis Suarez, like, he didn't score on Saturday, but by Jesus, again, like, he set Sterling up for the cross. Like, we're talking about the volley off the thing. He's taking corners. He's just a joy to watch. Every time you see him and Sturridge, even like the ball that he plays to Sturridge, that Sturridge misses, you're putting your house on it that Sturridge is going to score. He just works so hard, and even the goal that he got called, was the one that was ruled off sorry, yeah, he broke through, and that was so tight when they showed it.
And Phil, he's gutted coming off when he hasn't scored. He's just absolutely shattered.
He looked tired though, lads, I have to be honest. Yet again off the ball when Arsenal were breaking, he looked a little bit laboured in terms of his getting himself, you know, normally he'd be clicking his heels together, right, I'll get back into shape and I'll get myself back in position for if we break and whatever, and he was that little yard off it, and personally, you know, obviously you want him playing against Fulham and hopefully we bash them on Wednesday. I would be resting him on Sunday. I would be sending out Aspas and a few others on Sunday for that. I know we'll get to the preview probably.
I'd say the other one for me was Brendan's celebrations on the touchline. He was loving that so much.
Absolutely.
And in fairness, one of the things that made me happy as well, when the final whistle went, it was the first time I seen Wenger not get all snotty and grumpy because he'd been thumped. There was actually a wry smile on his face, and he just said, "Well done, Brendan." And you could actually see him say it, and it was like, "You're saying right." He knows he's been done over at this stage, and like he's taken it, really happy to do it. You know what I mean? So,
as the wise man Sam Allardyce once said, "We out tacticked them."
Okay.
Wise, fast.
Sorry, I meant pies. Sorry.
And just before we move away from this, this whole thing about Phil's prediction, the 5...
What was it? 5-0? Arsenal minus 2.
5-0. Oh, credit where it's due. He's after calling the big result there. Well,
just for the record, when you say he called it right, do you mean his random mental shout of 5-0 that he just lashed out? And then, and then, you know, 30 minutes post or pre-kickoff when he says, Arsenal are going to bash us here.
I already gave you a ration for it, okay? Now, you had a good few days to think about it, in fairness to you. But last week when you made that 5-0 shout, you said, I don't know what, I don't know fucking why. I just think we're going to bat them like we did against fucking Spartan. I don't know why. That's what happened.
And it's true.
That's a properly good impression as well. Okay.
Don't mind the haters.
I don't mind it.
Let's move on to our preview of Liverpool versus Fulham, which we hope is going to take place on Wednesday. There's some things being said at the moment. We'll see how that works out. Tony, can I come to you first? The key to this surely is to not change the midfield setup. Would that be fair to say? Is there a lesson to be gained from what we did on Saturday?
Well, I think what I'll learn from what United did, don't go wide, don't bang crosses in, which we don't do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, get them down the middle, get them with pace. I think this will be, it should be relatively routine. I mean, mind you, there were times when West Brom looked like they should have been, and, you know, and they fell asleep a little bit. But I think Fulham are still in a bit of disarray. I mean, you know, they got a draw at the really bad side, you know. So I wouldn't be feeling too good about myself if I was a Fulham player. You know, so as they said, you know, it's compared them to conference teams. But like, you know, I think it's just a case of get the ball quick, get Coutinho on the ball in the midfield, get the ball up, get it into feet, get the runners going through, and I think it'll be relatively straightforward. I mean, I'm rather thinking to myself, 3-0 would be nice.
That would be very nice, Tony. Paul Brennan, do you think Fulham are going to snap at us a lot more than what Arsenal did?
No, I think they'll try and do what they did to United, basically. Just try and sit back. The only real change to the midfield that I'd make, I might rest Gerrard and bring Allen in as the deepest midfielder. Just, I think, Lee, obviously, I think we're going to be pushed up a bit higher and he's a bit more mobile. And it'd also rest Gerrard for the Arsenal game. Because I'd just do the exact same to Arsenal, what we did at Anfield, just do the same at the Emirates. Like. So the Fulham game, the Fulham game, that's all I'd do, bring in Alan.
Excellent. Okay, thanks very much. Andy Young, what do you think? Midfield stays the same?
Yeah, well, you know it will, like, because that's how Rodgers rolls. But I don't know whether it's going to be the right thing again with West Brom, you know, the same sort of story. Like, Liverpool are going to need to play up higher up the pitch and make the pitch smaller. There's not going to be that thing against Everton and Arsenal where there's a quick change of possession and the transition of play and you hit them on the break. Fulham aren't going to do that. So, like you absolutely couldn't drop Coutinho after a game like that. But I certainly would like to see a trio midfield that's just going to retain possession and just kind of move the play up slowly, as opposed to trying to catch him the counter, because that's not going to happen. So you really do want the midfield who's going to knock the ball around. Maybe Gerrard, the way he's been playing that deeper role, like, hadn't even thought of that. Ter Paul said it there, but maybe you could rest him, but that's unlikely to happen either. But certainly it's going to be a game where they need to just retain possession more and just trying to force it and get the early goal. We used to always talk with the early goal early in the season. If they can get the early
Coutinho,
goal.
Isn't he? Yeah. The key's Coutinho, because he can pick, not only can he knock the ball longer, but he can pick those little diagonal balls, and the pace of Sturridge, Sterling and Suarez, I'll get them on the back foot, and he can knock them through. But you know, it's
you know yourself, Tony, he's not going to be that space in behind like against Fulham.
Well, but I mean, the thing is that they'll drag them all over the place, won't they? They won't be getting in behind them. But he can play that little diagonal ball. You know that he does it so well, that just picks that little yard out which they can get into. And the one thing that the Fulham defence isn't is quick.
Yeah,
I think the trick here, Tony, is a bit of reverse psychology. We sit back for the 10 minutes on our own 18-yard box and draw them out. Fuck with their heads.
No, they just a big goal for space in the midfield.
Yeah,
I think it's just going to be a game where Suarez goes out and does the damage.
Seriously, right? I haven't watched them yesterday. Like, they're going to park a fleet of buses. The fleet of the National Express, they're going to just park every single bus they can find in front of the goal, because that's what they tried to do to United yesterday, right? Yeah. And it was a case of, if United got one, they're going to get two, and that's exactly what happened. And any other day of the week or any other team, and there's no way that Fulham are coming back, but United have the Hodgsons about them at the moment, and they went
jittery.
And they're just jittery, and they don't believe they're going to get a result. And I'm looking at it saying, given the players we have, the one thing that we don't do is what we did against West Brom, and we need to shift that back four in the game up higher up the pitch.
Yeah, 15 yards higher.
I can't see them having the pace to get behind us anyway if they try and knock a ball over the top.
Richardson could be one that causes a little bit of...
I'll tell you one thing, and obviously this is going to be reverse jinxing him, but Richardson always seems to do something stupid against us. I remember him being in Anfield with Sunderland and doing stupid things, giving away a penalty and almost getting sent off. Personally, I just say, we push the back forward up a bit, even if Gerrard plays, and he plays that just a bit higher to the middle of the pitch instead of being sitting behind the actual two centre-backs and stays in front of them. We'll have enough, there won't be enough space for them to get in between, say, Coutinho and Henderson and cause the trouble that West Brom did. And if we have Coutinho, Henderson, Sterling, Suarez, Sturridge up top with the two boys of full-backs, and even we've seen that Sissoko went on a rampage down the left wing against West Brom, like, in terms of attacking. There's no reason why we shouldn't be confident going into the Fulham game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it could turn out, as somebody said there already, I think it could turn out to be the Suarez show. I think he's just been a little bit subdued in the last couple of games, in the sense of just not getting on the score sheet. He was unlucky with a free kick and with obviously his volley.
That was an incredible attempt.
The free. Yeah, absolutely. It was, and Chesney was not expecting it to come. You know what I mean? Because everything else up till then, what he'd done was he dinked it into that penal spot, 6-yard box, and let the lads go and attack. But I think we could see something like a Suarez free kick, or just, you know, the way he tore Norwich apart. I could see him just doing that on his own on Wednesday night, and then the lads following suit, hopefully. But hopefully he will just provide that bit of magic that United just don't have at the moment. They just don't have that bit of magic to unlock a resolute defence like Fulham. And I think Wednesday night's when he's going to want goals. He's sick of looking at Sturridge banging them in.
I was waiting to hear people start kind of having a go at Suarez and how many goals he scored lately, but his level of play hasn't dropped one bit.
For the
goals are just being shared. Suarez, like, just other players scoring. Just a point on Fulham. They're not good at defending set pieces, and as I stack him up earlier about Liverpool being the most scorers of set piece in the Premier League this season, the Fulham game at Anfield, it was started with two set pieces as well.
Yep.
Two corners. Was a free kick, was it? And Suarez was trying to claim it. And then this Skirtle header.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
you know,
a couple of free kicks in deep areas.
that could be an excellent reason even to just start Gerrard and take him off after 60. Just his set-piece delivery this season has been... Mm. Now, fair enough, actually, you know, he had two great set-pieces within 10 minutes and then some of his corners were shite yeah. after that. But in terms of the amount of assists he's provided from set-pieces...
Gerrard's always been like that. His corners, there's no one better at hitting corners once he gets it over the first man.
Yeah.
Because it's impossible to hit. The ball is coming down.
They're like an arrow.
Spinning.
Yeah.
But it's the same with his in-swing or free kicks as well. Sometimes he don't beat the first man. He doesn't float it in, you know, like Gary Mack floater in. Like, you know, chances are it's gonna get to where you want it to get.
Yeah.
But
if you get a touch danger, on it, it's gonna cause damage.
Gerrard is aiming for the far post every time. Yeah. You know, so if it misses, everyone's going in, you know.
Paul, do you think if there is, as people are saying, if Agger is fit, do we look to get him some minutes, you know, in the next match? Would you look to make any changes, really? I know you've spoken about Alan early on, but specifically Agger in defence.
Agger, I wouldn't mind, especially, you know, I'd probably start just with the same two lads that started against Arsenal and then bring Agger on if we can. I don't think there's too much point like faffing about at the back with the personnel at the back unless we need to. But yeah, it'd be great to get him a few minutes and have him kind of as fit as we can get him, get him match sharp, as quick as we can for the run in. But I wouldn't kind of risk him unnecessarily.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the Arsenal game is perfect for this, especially bringing back someone like Agger, and if they're talking that Johnson might be fit as well. So, you know, and there's no reason not Hopefully to play them because they'd be forced 11 players. 3 or 4 months ago, so that you can throw them in there. If we're winning by a comfortable score, get them on, sure, why not, and have a few. Like let's be realistic, we're going for the double here. We need to get as many fit players on the team as possible.
What's the story with Sacco? Like every match that comes up, there's rumours that he's going to be fit.
Well, I've seen him on Twitter earlier on in the gym breaking machines.
There are no more weights.
Yeah. There are no more.
But it'd be silly to risk Agger, I think, because the last thing you want is him out for another half dozen games because, you know, we're on the...
That suggests, Andy, you want him in to the team as soon as possible when he's right.
When he's right, absolutely. Like, I mean, I know Torre and Skirtle have been playing quite well together, but still, Torre's far choice for me each time. Yeah. You know, so you get Sacco back. You just couldn't drop Skirtle the way he's playing, but you get Sacco or Agger, whoever's fit first in there.
Okay, Molly, can I come to you first for our predictions then, please? How do you see this match going?
Well, to be honest, guys, I'm slightly worried about this game, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think the 5-1 Arsenal win, I might have fans going, oh, yeah, this one is going to be easy. You're going to run around pulling 5 or 6-0. I'm not too sure about that. I can see Fulham sticking just 10 men behind the ball, and we're going to have to try and break them down. And, you know, I think one of the lads made a great point earlier on. I think it could come down to a bit of magic from Suarez. I would snap her hands off for 1-0 win right now.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. Tony Evans, I know you kind of half predicted something earlier on. Would you stick behind that? I think you were looking at a pretty comfortable win or hoping for one.
Yeah, I've seen Fulham a couple of times this year, and they're not great. I mean, the addition of Holtby helps them. You know, he gives them a bit more energy in midfield and closes people down. But you know, if they sit deep and they let us pick up the ball, if they let the captain or Coutinho pick up the ball 35 yards out and then try and close them down, the movement of our front three will just kill them. I mean, I just don't see them holding out. And, you know, and if we lay siege to the goal like United did, I'm telling you, we'll score goals.
Lovely. Steve Daly.
Phil's waiting for a big 3-1 shout out. 3-1. Here. 3-1, please.
Andy Young.
Why is that making me get all worried now about this one?
Sorry, mate.
Every team has been more than fucking Fulham all season. You know, United. You know, that was just a crack yesterday. United fucking dropping points against them. Like, you know, especially at home, people have been tearing Fulham a fucking sunder each and every game. So anyway, listen, I think we've had joy in at Fulham an awful lot, and it makes you think back to Maxi destroying them as well. And so I think we can see it just from a stupid goal, and maybe go 4-1
just to be there. Paul Brennan, your shout.
I'll go for a conservative 2-1. It reminds me a lot of the West Brom game following the Everton game, where it's going to be completely different, like the completely different approach to what we're going to have to take. Mm. And I don't really see it being a cakewalk either. So I'd say 2-1.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tight as well. I think Luis Suarez is due to pull us out of fire, and I think he might just do that by the odd goal. So Phil Casey rounded out.
Let me gaze into my crystal ball here. I'll pick a number out of my hole. All joking aside, I think we'll win this one. I've seen good things in terms of the way we've played it in games. This to me just doesn't seem like it. We're going to slip up, and I think we'll probably win 6 or 7-0.
Brilliant. Okay, excellent. Right, on now to our next part of the show, listeners' questions, and we have a special one to kick this off for you, Tony. This is from at Damo Flood 32 of this parish, and he's wondering: is it true that you would rate Paul Lambert ahead of both Brendan Rodgers and Roberto Martinez?
I think he's got the potential to become a top class manager, and over the length of his career, I think he's going to be a really good manager. And I think he, judging by what I've seen of all three, he's the one long term I'd have the most belief in. But you know what? I've been wrong before.
Fair enough, mate. Okay, next question. Sorry, Molly, did you have something to add to that?
I just have a quick question there for Tony. We have Arsenal again Saturday in the FA Cup. If you were offered last Friday that you could only beat Arsenal once, whether it be the league or the FA Cup match, which one would you have taken?
The league.
That's
definitely. Well, you know, it's and then there's me old middle-aged cynical Liverpool fan view of it the first time, because then you get another chance to beat them.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Paul Brennan, you're up for the next question. This is from Marco Lopez at Funny Mark Hall. He asks, this is a United-based question, so we should just probably revel in their discomfort for a few moments. Who's to blame? Is it David Moyes or is it Alex Ferguson?
Definitely Moyes. Like, I know people are trying to say Ferguson chose him, but Ferguson should have been told to fuck off when he started saying that it was Moyes. So, like, I'd say, like, the board, obviously, for putting Moyes in, because he's an absolute chancer, like, at that level. But
it's great, isn't it? It's so much fun.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Like, I sounded like a wounded animal laughing at that Darren Bennett. I was worried that the neighbours would be banging on the wall seeing if I was all right or something. It was hilarious. Like,
do you know,
it just reeked of Moyes, that performance. Like, it was 81
reeked
crosses.
Reeked of Moyes.
Yeah,
do you know, I don't... Sorry.
No, go on.
I don't blame either. I think what United really need is a singing section. What they should do is put it on trial, okay, in the Champions League, and if it's successful, bring it into the league. And then, you know, it'll be just back to normal.
Oh, cynical bastard. Steve O'Daly, closet blue of the group.
Yep, that's me. Yeah, no, it's Moyes without question. You know, like, listen, Ferguson isn't picking the team. Ferguson isn't lacking motivation. He isn't lacking tactic. Well, he did lack tactical awareness. he's lactating. No, he's not lacking tactical awareness, even though he did for many, many years. But what I'm saying is, you can't blame a bloke who, fair enough, yeah, he had a hand in appointing him. But that's like saying fucking, I don't know, you know, it's someone else's fault that Hodgson was as poor for us as he was. You know what I mean? It's the manager's fault. He's not able to get the players up for it. He didn't buy well.
He just keeps getting out tactic.
He gets out tactic, and he's abysmal in the transfer market. Yeah. He always has been. He's always bought at the very last, yep, you know, state. He's done it in the summer. He's done it in January, and I don't see it being any different in the summer either. Well, it will be, because he won't be fucking there, let's be honest, you know.
Fair.
Maybe someone else pointed out.
This is one of God's disagree with you. Ferguson left him a heap of steaming shite on the pitch.
You know what, Tony? I don't agree with you there.
And you know what? And then come the summer, the failure in the transfer market wasn't down to Moyes. It was down to Ed Woodward, who took over from David Gill, who just blundered through every transfer negotiation. He made our transfer negotiations look like, oh, I don't know, look like Bayern Munich's. Yeah. You know, it's, and so the thing is, what he needs to do is he needs to spend a lot of money, and actually,
Yeah, like, but I don't see how you blame Ferguson for that. You know, he did leave him a team that won the league by 11 points. You know what I mean? That's the long and the short of it, Tony. You know, Ferguson, yeah, fair enough, they were a steaming pile of shite, but they're a steaming pile of shite that were champions come May. So, you know what I mean? Now they're a steaming pile of shite that are looking up their arse at Newcastle overtaking them.
This time last year, I did a column in the paper, and I said, that it's all going to go wrong. This squad needs 100 million spending on it. And you can imagine the stick United fans give me. It was almost as bad as the stick Liverpool fans give me. and you know,
totally undeserved, eh, Tony?
And they won the league, like, and so, you know, it was even worse. But you could see this coming. And the thing is, Ferguson, we'll come to look on Ferguson's heritage as a really, really poisonous one. Because what he did is he facilitated the Glazers and the whole way that they've operated financially with the club. And he left them with a squad that hadn't been restocked, certainly in midfield, from when Ronaldo left. And it's got weaker and weaker every year. And you know what? You've got to say Ferguson's a genius because he managed to drag them to the league. Well, but you know what? No one else is going to do that. Moyes is nowhere near the talent of the manager as Ferguson is. He's nowhere near the talent of a manager who should be in charge of a club like Man United. But when you add that to like this dreadful legacy that was left, it was always going to be a car crash.
But just a one-word answer from you, Tony. Would Mourinho have them where they are now if he'd taken over instead? Or do you think they'd actually be in there challenging?
They'd be higher, definitely.
And that's why Moyes is shit, and it's his fault.
I tell you what, though. They'd only be challenging with us for fourth and fifth place. Yeah. They wouldn't be challenging for the title.
I think that's
we're going to win the league. I'm not having that.
next one up is, I think this is aimed at you, Paul, specifically, because I don't know how many wrestling fans we have in the room here, and I believe you're quite the aficionado, fella.
Look, he's got his Triple H t-shirt on.
he's trying to grow a Jim the Anvil Neuhart player.
Hulk Brennan.
The question, Paul, for you is, if you could recreate the 1998 Hell in a Cell, whatever the fuck that was, who would you have the Undertaker throw off the roof? That's from Ryan McTernan.
You can put anyone.
Himself. And the rest of the fucking wrestlers. Clowns.
Ryan, I don't think he's a wrestling fan, mate. Next one, Moldy, this is for you, fella. This is from Jim Fishlock, and Jim is wondering, what are your favourite cartoons, and do you watch any now?
Oh, I'm a big cartoon head, I am.
Oh, yeah?
I need to name my firstborn after my favourite cartoon character when I was growing up.
Scooby-Doo.
Go on, who's that?
Fine, but, we did Jace and the Wheel Warriors.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I named him Jace just after that cartoon, for no other reason. And even nowadays, I have like a three-year-old and, you know, he'd be watching the cartoons of Ben 10 and all this type of stuff. And he might fall asleep in my lap. And I would continue on watching the Ben 10 until the show. Big cartoon head.
Good man. Steve Daly, get us going on this one. We might get this off a few people because it's an interesting one from Andrew Rowe, who asks, which famous person do you look like? He does state that honesty is not a prerequisite, but we're in the room with you, so we're going to know if you're bullshitting. Like, so who do you look like? What famous guy do you look like?
Aqua Lapetta. What's it? Oh, fucking Chelsea. What's his name? The left back.
Aspilicueta.
My Spanish isn't what it could be. Yeah, I'll pull up a picture for those that are in the room at the minute.
This is really good now for somebody with no pictures.
Right. Hang on. No, you lads go on and I'll show you. You can tell me in a second.
Paul Brennan, who do you look like, Chief?
I've no fucking idea.
Honest to God?
No. I don't know. Well, who do you reckon I look like?
Tony Modi, who do you reckon Paul looks like?
A smacked ass.
Oh, fucking shout. Okay. Next one's from Chris Offlands. Chris, he's at Original Toff on Twitter, and he wonders, what would be the title of your autobiography? Now, I know mine is I've Forgotten My Name after my recent efforts. Anyone else got a shout for me on the autobiography title? Did anyone do any homework here on this? Oh, fucking.
Mine is I Told You So.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one, yeah.
Abducted by Aliens.
Quality, okay. Next one is from Gray. Gray asks, which footballer, past or present, Paul, I'm coming to you on this, which footballer, past or present, really fucking winds you up? Just the sight of him, the mention of his name, just sets you off on one.
Rio Ferdinand. He seems to crop up a lot in these conversations. I'm not getting into it again. Rio Ferdinand.
Fair enough. Steve Daly, anyone?
There's two probably. Jack Wilshere, actually. I hate the little bastard. And Victor Moses.
Victor Moses.
Yeah, just the sign of him. I said it here before. Every time I see him warming up on the sideline or his stupid head in the dugout with a big duffel coat on, I just think, fuck off.
Fair enough. Phil, you hate most things. Who would you go for?
My lookalike, strange enough.
Oh, yeah.
Stuart fucking Downing. Oh, man. Even if, genuinely, the thoughts of a fucking mind, it makes me close my fists and just want to go on a rampage.
Calm down, Phil. You're amongst friends.
Let's go to Molly again for the next one. Your first celebrity crush, mate.
Oh, that's a good question. I suppose I had a couple of hand shandies to be done in a day.
Yeah, look, nobody's going to beat that. I'm just going to move the fuck on.
Christ.
No, I want to hear yours, Trev.
Yeah.
I really want to hear you.
Audrey Hepburn. Go on.
BB Baskin.
Fuck off. BB
Baskin. Do you actually want to hear it?
Yeah, the same poster as Andy Dufresne on his wall.
Go on, yeah, Trev. We do want to know.
Gang of bastards.
Then I want to hear Tony's.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, mine goes back. Probably Olivia Tracy, who was Miss Ireland and then Miss Universe or something like that. Pretty in about 1985 or 6. I had a picture of her under the freezer, hidden away from my parents.
Under the freezer?
Yeah, I was a dirty little pervert. it was probably for a bit of moly action there.
Tony, what was yours?
Oh, you know what? If you say
Cilla Black, we're fucking hanging up the phone.
The girl, the puff. He should be going to match. First celebrity crush. I like Candice Bergen, but now you are old enough to remember that. You know, it's years ago.
I touch with Cilla Black there, Tony.
Now I'm out. I'm over there. You wouldn't say that to me if I was in the room.
Andy Young, this is for you. This is from Barry Carr. Actually sounds familiar. If you had a 7-item breakfast, what would all of the items be in it?
Right, I'm not mad at the bacon, right, so I'll leave that. So it's all sausages, Clonakilty white pudding, and then the rest eggs, whatever amount of items I have left. Now, eggs, right?
You love eggs, Andy.
This is Andy's cooking corner. Come on,
this is life changing, okay? I don't know what way you make your scrambled eggs, whether you put them in a pot or you put them in a microwave just to be lazy and give them a stir or whatever. Do your fucking scrambled eggs in a frying pan.
Yeah.
Do it that way, and like, if you really want to go all out, put a few chili flakes in it. But it's a life changer. I don't know, like, Steve-O, obviously you do your fucking scrambled egg in the pan, either way. Yeah.
Well, I do them in a pot or a pan, but a little non-stick pan.
Like, I find if it's in the pot, they dry up very badly, you know, and they get real bally, and you can't get the last few eggs.
No. You have to, there's an art to it, and it's about the right quantity of milk. A little bit of...
Milk, no milk, into the pan, and just... scramble them up while they're in the pan and make sure the yolk and the white part doesn't mix fully.
No
milk.
No, miles off, mate. You've got to get the whisk. You have to get the air into it. You have to aerate.
You're not making pancakes.
You have to aerate your scrambled eggs.
You're not making pancakes. You're making scrambled eggs.
I make incredible scrambled eggs. What I'm going to do the next time we come here is I'm going to make you some scrambled eggs and see what you think, Andy.
While we're here?
Yeah. On air.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I'll bring
as a challenge,
burner.
We'll both make eggs,
and we're going to video,
and we get the lads to taste who's nice, and we just like nobody can see who made it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And we'll see
who nice it is. Blind taste test.
That's definitely.
But anyone who's listening, if you do your eggs in microwaves or fucking pots, you're wasting your bollocks. get them into a frying pan, a little bit of butter, salt, pepper, and if you want to really go out, few chili flakes.
Thanks, Andy.
You'll be eating Mickey.
Thanks, Andy. That was fucking illuminating. We need to get away from that topic quickly because Andy's passionate about this shit. Paul, yeah. Nick, who's at MerseyBoyRed, asks, if you could remotely control one person, doesn't have anything to do with football, who would it be?
Can I say Rio Ferdinand again? And I'd fucking control him into the biggest volcano. The prick.
Thank you. That's concise. Next one up is from Jasper A, and
she just had a dumpy moment. He's taking the earphones out and discussing.
Give me that pen, I'll fucking across the studio.
Now, Bill.
Now.
Is from Lucy. She's asking, what's the most embarrassing single or album purchased? Now, actually, I'm going to try and get this off a few people. Molly, I'm coming to you in a minute, but I'm going to start with Steve Daly here. Your most embarrassing single or album that you've ever bought?
The Spice Girls.
Oh, fuck me.
Yeah, I only bought it so I could look at the pictures on the inside. You know the little thing they used to give you with the album?
Are we back to Celebrity Crush?
Yeah.
Did you store it under the freezer, mate?
No, man.
You store it under the freezer to wrap it around yourself when you were doing it?
I couldn't open it after about 2 days. It was stuck together.
Molly, most embarrassing single or album purchase, mate?
Well, the first album I ever owned was a bit embarrassing. It was Wham.
Oh, God, yes, yeah, good one.
I don't know how I got my hands. It was Wham.
I've Wham's greatest hits.
Mm.
That doesn't surprise
me. Mine was The Corrs.
The Corrs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only had met my wife now at the time, and I was listening to The Corrs, and it was a fucking deal breaker, like, for the relationship, because, like, she couldn't fucking believe I was listening to The Corrs.
So hang on, so it actually worked for you, is that what you telling me?
Well, I had to stop listening to them.
Oh, fuck it, oh, yeah.
What a woman.
But here's one for you on The Corrs, right?
Jim Corr, abducted by aliens with Andy.
So would you make your Corrs in a microwave or in a pot?
No. Add a few chili flakes.
Would you?
Just, you'll be pulling your Mickey out.
Would you let Jim Corr, in order to get a jump off the two sisters? Answer the fucking question.
You'd have to shave that goatee off anyway.
Okay, next one. We'll try and get a few people on this as well. Second last one from Mike Hale here, and he's wondering, which sitcom character are you most similar to, personality-wise, not appearance-wise? We'll come to you as Pilaquetta for this one. What's the crack? which sitcom character are you most similar to?
Schmidt off New Girl.
Oh, okay.
Anybody watches New Girl?
I've been watching that with my daughter recently. That's quite funny.
Yeah, I'm probably a bit of a douche, to be honest with you.
So. Yeah, he's quite prissy. Are you telling me you're a bit prissy?
Yeah, probably am.
Nice one.
If we're being honest.
It's not a sitcom. I fancy myself as Reg out of The Bill, though, probably.
That's actually a brilliant shout. Yeah. Okay, last one for today. If everyone on the Day Trippers, Molly, we'll start with you on the line. If everyone on the Day Trippers competed at the Winter Olympics, what event would you do? Right, Molly, you're up.
Oh, well, I suppose muff diving isn't in the Winter Olympics.
It is on a trench freezer.
Everything's up for grabs there, mate.
I'd go with skiing.
Skiing? Okay, Paul Brennan.
The skier. I've never actually done it, but I fancy myself at it.
Brilliant.
I feel I have a natural ability.
Okay, brilliant. Paul Brennan.
I'm a lazy shite, so I'd probably do it. I'd say call the luge. Is it where you just lie down?
I'm all
the
about
thing,
the luge.
Just lie down the thing and basically dice with deck on.
Yes.
Like, I'd rather kind of risk my life than, you know, try and do any running.
Like
any sort of cross country skiing or anything like that. Nah.
I think there is, to be fair to the luge contestants, there is some skill to it, mate.
It's not you just lie down and go.
It's not much effort, but is it?
It's not exactly like fucking, you know. Fucking little yellow ducks going down the Liffey now. Whoever gets over the line first is grand.
Well, I don't have to do it well. I just don't have to do it.
Nobody said I was a medalist.
Brenzy the Eagle.
Steve-o.
I think either bobsleigh or curling.
curling, fucking lovely. Yeah,
Andy, I've always wanted
if,
to try
snowball fighting was a sport, and I'd be good at that.
Are you handy at that, fella?
Not so much, but I'll tell you a quick story about it. It was do you remember before auction was called Witness, yeah. So it was years ago, and it was a really dirty mucky one, okay, yeah. And whatever band were on at the time, I not too mad into music, I was just there for the gargle and the sure. crack, and no, I don't know, I might have been a Prodigy or something like that at the time, but everyone was just throwing muck, that's what everyone was doing, muck balls. But I got a fucking muck ball, right, and got a whopper of a shot. There was a girl, it was back to Crocodile Dundee and the can from fucking 50 yards. This was up there. There was a board up on this bloke's shoulders with a camera about to take the snap, and boom, muck ball, camera, fucking miles out of my hand. It was fucking brilliant, like, and it happened.
It happened. Actually, yeah, sorry, Phil.
The one that I would love to do is the ski jump.
You know, Eddie the Eagle Edwards job.
Yeah, yeah. I genuinely want to know how you're trained to do that. Don't mind even just do it. Like, I think
it's the same. Genuinely, I think it's the same as if you're doing fucking the high dive. You know what I mean?
You start off with little ones.
Yeah,
you work your way up.
Yeah, you work your way up and you build the distance and the height that you're coming from bit by bit.
Oh, man. I think that's just one of the best things to watch. I watched it all yesterday after the United and Fulham game, and they were just doing the normal jump, and it's just phenomenal. The skill, and there's just balls about it, and you just go up and you're floating, and it's like judging your landing and the whole lot. And the lads wreck themselves when they get it all wrong. Like, that's the best bit. Like, it's like watching ice skating. You don't want to see them do well. You want to see them go under arse.
You want to see carnage.
Yeah.
Right, and actually there is one that's just come in late here from Joe Pepper on Twitter, and he is asking, when they make a film about this crazy season, who will play the main characters? He suggests Steve Buscemi for David Moyes, which is a good shout.
David Moyes.
Have we got any shouts for who might play Brendan or who might play any other characters? Anyone around the table?
Liam Neeson has to be for Brendan, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that's a safe one. Yeah. He's earnest enough. Anyone else?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Who main players? Who would you play as Josie? I think you'd get Kevin Spacey in as Josie, because you know the way
George Clooney get lost in his eyes, like.
It's such a dreamboat.
What the actual Paul Brennan's celebrity crush, George Clooney.
And we are fucking out. We are out. That's just brilliant. Thanks, Paul.
Paul Brennan giving the day tripper sound bites in 2013.
Fucking great. 100-year-old Christopher Lee is Manuel Pellegrini.
Yeah. Or Christopher Walken.
Right, brilliant. Okay, just lastly, some admin then. Well done to Noel Tracy, who won the tickets to see the 5-time show featuring Dee Dee Haman and Jamie Carragher on February 27th. We'll be in touch directly on Twitter with Noel. The HJC Cup Ireland is on March 22nd in Astro Park here. Details will be on our timeline tomorrow, so get a team in. If you can't manage that yourself, the Irish Cop lads can fix you up. Contribute to a wonderful cause, and you can watch me and the lads take home the trophy. Big thanks as always go to Johnny Rep for our simply fucking brilliant intro music. You should check out their new single Give, which is out now. You can follow all our news and views on our smart feed at Liverpool Ways, run by the very sound called Turley, so get following that account. And if you want some excellent articles and content, get down to Moldy's www.beyondthecop.com. My own writing is 4 days a week on the excellent Liverpool Offside website. That's liverpooloffside.sbnation.com. Subscribe to all Trippery stuff on Podbean, iTunes, or via any podcatcher on Android. And finally, your day trippers tonight were Tony Evans, Molly, Andy Young, Paul Brennan, Stephen Daly, the witch doctor Casey, and myself, the nameless love child of two bald wolves, Trev Downey. Oh, what a perfect day.
It's not liable to say you'd let them do it, though, is it?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
That's still recording. That's the go in.